And now the power of chasing history and sometimes its futility. We end this hour with some thoughts about Europe's darkest 20th century ghost, a ghost that haunts all of the nations of the world. 75 years ago today, on May 13, 1939, the MS St. Louis set sail from Hamburg, Germany, with 937 German Jewish refugees seeking asylum aboard, first in Cuba, then the United States, then in Canada. All three countries refused to take them, and the ship eventually returned to Europe. It was not a homecoming. Two of the Jewish refugees, Alexander Goldschmidt and his son Helmut, stepped from that ship on a journey that would take them to Auschwitz, where they would die in 1942. Alexander's grandson is a writer, and he's the familiar gentle host of the old NPR Performance Today program, Martin Goldsmith. He retraced that journey to write his new book, Alex's Wake, A Voyage of Betrayal and a Journey of Remembrance. Martin, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello, John. It's great to be with you.
So how did you first hear about this story in your family, that your grandfather and uncle were aboard this ship and were struggling to escape and to find asylum?
My mother and father managed to escape Germany in 1941 because they were musicians playing in an all-Jewish orchestra called the Kulturbund. They arrived in this country in 1941, about the same time that my grandfather Alex and my uncle Helmut first were in the French concentration camp Rivesaltes, before being sent to Les Mills, before being sent to Drancy, before being sent to Auschwitz. We spoke very little about that when I was growing up. It wasn't until I began doing research for my first book, The Inextinguishable Symphony, that my father handed me a small stack of letters that he had received from his father and his younger brother from those French camps, and it was then that I first heard about the St. Louis.
And you had to make a decision to create this book to essentially step into territory that your father refused to go to help, and it's not clear if he could have done anything, get your grandfather and uncle out of the hands of the Germans.
That is correct. When my mother and father arrived in this country in 1941, they were obviously refugees. They managed to cobble together menial jobs, which brought them $26 a week in pay. They would occasionally send $25 via the Quakers to my grandfather and uncle in those camps in France. They probably really couldn't have done anything substantive to save them, but the fact remains that my father went to his grave realizing that he didn't do everything he possibly could. He was burdened with a great deal of guilt. He passed some of that guilt on to me, I realize, not wittingly, of course. So I, 3 years ago, decided that if my father couldn't save his father and brother, I would somehow try in a very ridiculous, obviously irrational way to try to save my grandfather and my uncle, which was one of the reasons that I began this six-week, 5,700-mile journey in their footsteps.
What was it like to wander through the Europe of the 21st century in relative wealth and privilege, but stepping on the exact same soil that your grandfather and uncle stepped on?
Well, it was simultaneously exhilarating and very saddening. Since my grandfather and uncle were murdered 10 years before I was born, I obviously had never had the opportunity to meet them. So driving into, say, the town of Montauban in France, where they had been held in an old cookie factory for a month, and finding police records of their existence there with a big letter J in red at the top of the car, J for Juif, was exciting. It was exciting to come upon evidence of their existence having been there, but simultaneously, of course, it was quite saddening. And I felt a good deal of guilt myself, traveling, as you mentioned, John, in relative comfort, driving down French roads in an air-conditioned car, staying in rather nice hotels, while my grandfather and uncle obviously had traversed that same route at the point of a gun, often in cattle cars.
You know, everyone has the experience of going into a closet of a lost loved one and smelling the clothes, touching the artifacts of someone who's no longer here. What did you see when you looked at the documents, at the ephemeral evidence of where your grandfather and uncle had been along this journey?
I somehow began to piece together little bits of their character. When I was in Oldenburg, Germany, where my grandfather established a very successful woman's clothing store, and where my uncle attended the Altes Gymnasium, the high school in Oldenburg, I came upon stories about my uncle, only 17 years old, standing up in an assembly in 1938, just weeks before Kristallnacht, condemning a German speaker who was spreading all of these stories about the bad effects of the Jews on German society. My uncle, 17 years old, stood up and shouted, "Das ist alles Lüge." These are all lies. Still today in Oldenburg, at that school, he is honored for that little moment of courage. I discovered a letter in the French concentration camp of Agde, hard by the Mediterranean Sea, a letter that my grandfather wrote to the district leader begging for his freedom. And he wrote in impeccable French, though he was born in Germany. I discovered a little bit about his determination. So at the end of this six-week journey, I felt that I knew these phantoms that I had been chasing just a little bit better.
Your grandfather, Alex, died in one of the gas chambers in Birkenau. He was 63. And at Barracks 20 in Auschwitz, where your uncle Helmut died, probably of a lethal injection or typhus in a clinic, you left a photograph. What does that mean to you, and what does it mean to the rest of us before we go?
Yes, my uncle Helmut was tattooed with the number 59305 and was died either of typhus or, as you say, lethal injection at age 21. I did leave his photograph there in Barracks 20 as I left a photograph of my grandfather in the ruined crematoria in Birkenau. It was an attempt to lay flowers on their grave, and it was something that I'm very, very pleased that I was able to do. It was an act of remembrance, which is something that I think all of us need to do to ensure that crimes of that sort are never possible again.
But not a futile remembrance, a grasping at meaning.
I don't think so.
No.
Yes, yes, it was a meaning that they are not forgotten. And then as a postscript to this six-week journey, I returned a year later to a ceremony where a plaque was affixed to the wall of my grandfather's former house, which speaks in German of what had happened to the family, how they were murdered in Auschwitz, and my grandmother and aunt murdered at the ghetto in Riga. And the plaque concludes with two lines from a poem by Emily Dickinson. "Remembrance has a rear and front. 'Tis something like a house."
Not so irrational an impulse. Martin Goldsmith, author of Alex's Wake, A Journey of Betrayal and A Journey of Remembrance. Thanks so much, Martin.
Thank you, John.
We had a remembrance of Viennese intellectual Stefan Zweig earlier this hour. He once wrote, "No guilt is forgotten, so long as the conscience still knows of it." We want to hear from you. What does your conscience tell you? Should we be able to erase history on the internet or anywhere? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Reputation.com, encouraging everyone to check their online search results because search results define you or your business. Learn more at Reputation.com. TiVo, able to search cable TV, on-demand libraries, and streaming content from Netflix and Hulu Plus on a single screen. Available at TiVo.com. The Henry Luce Foundation, for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.